Hey everybody, it's JT. What is on your holiday meal shopping list? Well, I would suggest Painted Hills Natural Beef. It is some of the best beef in the world. And your friends and family will be thanking you for a long time if you serve Painted Hills Natural Beef for your holiday meals. And now you can buy it online just by going to PaintedHillsBeef.com. Use the code BBQNATION at checkout and save yourself 15% on your order. Give Painted Hills Natural Beef a place on your table this holiday season.
It's time for Barbecue Nation with JT. So fire up your grill, light the charcoal, and get your smoker cooking. Now, from the Turn It, Don't Burn It studios in Portland, here's JT.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Barbecue Nation here on the Envision Radio Networks. A while back, I had a conversation with Mark Bittman. We'll be talking with him here shortly about his new book, How to Grill Everything. And we also want to say that this portion of Barbecue Nation is brought to you in part by Painted Hills Natural Beef. Beef you can be proud to serve your friends and family. That's Painted Hills Natural Beef. And if you'd like to email us, it's barbecuenation@salempdx.com. Now let's get on with my interview with Mark Bittman.
A name you may or may not be familiar with if you're a connoisseur of cookbooks like I am. You should be. Mark Bittman is going to join us today. Mark is the author of about 20 acclaimed books, including How to Cook Everything, a series, which is one of the ones we'll be talking about today, the new one. And also the New York Times number one bestseller, VB6, Eat Vegan Before 6 O'Clock. That's not something we would do probably here on this show.
No.
But it's okay. Mark, welcome to the show.
Nice to be here.
So, for those of my listeners across the Northwest and down in Texas who are not familiar with you, would you be kind enough to give them a little history about how you became a food writer, among other things?
Well, I was a writer before I was a food writer, but I was also a home cook, and this was really 38 years ago at this point. And I just didn't see that people were doing simple recipes for home cooks. And I started doing that, and that became sort of my niche. And, you know, as you've said, I've written a lot of books since then, and I had a weekly column in the Times for 20 years or so, and I'm still at it.
Well, there's something to be said for tenacity. I'll give you that. You know?
Right. Well, I think it's Woody Allen who said 90% of success is showing up.
That is true. That is true. And so how did you kind of switch over to barbecue and grilling and that? Was that just kind of the normal part of the process for you, or did you make a concerted effort to do that?
Right. I mean, the book is How to Grill Everything. I wouldn't consider it a barbecue book. There's some barbecue stuff in there, but I know that people who are into barbecue are obsessive about it, people who are really into it, and I'm sure you know that better than I do. And I would not claim this to be a barbecue book under any circumstances, so I just don't want to missell it. And, you know, there's a big difference between grilling and barbecuing, and I guess you could say that all barbecuing is a form of grilling, but certainly all grilling is not a form of barbecuing. And, you know, what I'm talking about here is basically cooking over live flame. So we don't have to get into what barbecue is unless you want to, but it is a small, very specific, very special thing, whereas grilling is pretty much anything that you would do over flame. Directly over flame, or even indirectly, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I know I've caught some grief from people who listen to the show because once in a while I will refer to things as grilling, which is an all-encompassing term for me, and they're the true barbecue aficionados, or they feel that they are, and they are, you know, I prefer, regardless of what I do on TV or in private, I prefer actually to use the term grilling for a lot of people because it, like my producer Dave here, you know, he's not set up to do the hardcore barbecue stuff in his backyard like I am. So
right.
So it makes it a little easier when we talk in those general terms for them, I think.
Right. Well, I think, you know, you can certainly do a fair approximation of barbecue on a regular, on any grill. And I have recipes for that in the book, but I'm just saying it is not a barbecue book.
Right. Okay.
It's a grilling book that has some barbecue in it.
No, I got it. It's all good. So when you decided to do this book, how did you go through the process of selecting some of the recipes? You've got some really interesting ones, and I'm going to talk to you about them in the next couple segments. But how did you go through the process of saying, this is going to be in, this is not going to be in, besides what they tell you at the publishing house? But how did Mark start that process?
They don't tell me. I mean, all cookbooks, at least for me, all cookbooks are the same. The most challenging part of the cookbook is not figuring out what goes in, but what figuring out what gets left out, because the options are infinite. So I break things down into chapters before I even start, and I try to figure out an approximation of how many recipes are going to go into each chapter. How much chicken, how much beef, how many vegetables, in this case, even desserts and breads and so on. And then I try to do a good mix of things that are not repetitive, things that are not conflictual, things that are classic and that everybody's going to want, and things that are new and that people have maybe not thought of before. So it's not a collection of my favorites, although I love all of them, but it's a collection of what I think is a good representation of what a grilling book in this, at this time in this country, ought to look like.
Do you have anybody that helps you with this? I mean, like an assistant, or do you do these recipes in your own kitchen?
Yep, both. Yeah. Both. There are people working with me, and I do them in my own, or on my own porch. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's you get the neighbors kind of peeking over the fence or something, saying, "Hey, can we sample that?"
Yes.
Well, then I know you're a good cook, you see, when that happens. That kind of happens at my house, too, when I get the smokers going and the grill going, except I was
God,
just,
I can imagine, yeah.
Yeah, except I was just informed by Dr. Dave, my producer here, that I've never fed him
never
anything in 2 years we've been working together, and I find that hard to believe, but anyway.
It's true. You gotta fix that.
I gotta fix that. It's, you know, I don't want him to become like an ex-wife or something. Anyway, one thing I gotta get this out there. And so for all the hardcore barbecue people out there, bear with me on this. But you talk about grilling tofu, and I believe me, Mark, I have made many jokes on my shows over the years about tofu. Okay, but so redeem me with tell me a story about grilling tofu.
Your problem is you think tofu is a joke, or you think it's tasteless, or what?
Well, I think it's meant for Chinese soup and a few things like that. But as a protein on a plate, if you will, as the centerpiece, I have a tough time imagining that. But in reading the recipe, I could actually see myself wanting to try it.
Well, you know, I think it's a little bit like chicken, which is to say it's kind of a blank canvas. It obviously doesn't have a lot of flavor by itself, but it takes flavor. It takes other flavors very well. And I think, you know, I mean, it's not for everyone. I do agree. But if people are interested in non-meat cookery, let's say, it's one of the best alternatives. And it's, you know, it's a high quality food. It's nothing fake about it. It's traditional. And as I said, it takes, you know, takes smoke very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually a smoked tofu recipe in here, which I guess you could call a barbecue recipe. And I think it really does take smoke well, because again, it's like a sponge. It soaks up any flavor that you want to add to it. So, I think it's worth a try. I don't peddle anything. Again, as I said before, I want a representative selection of recipes here. I don't expect every person to fall in love with every single recipe.
But, oh, sure.
I will say that these are good tofu recipes in here.
Well, like I said, you've convinced me to give it a shot.
I'm ecstatic.
You should be. You should be. Because like I said, I'm a huge fan of Chinese food, and especially good Chinese food, and hot and sour soup and some of those things that, you know, I've had tofu in, and I've had tofu obviously in stir fry and other dishes and so on and so forth. That's fine. But in reading the recipe last night, I thought it was great. We're going to take a break and come back with Mark Bittman and his new book, How to Grill Everything. And about the only thing that's not in this book is how to grill a Volkswagen. He's very thorough in this. But we'll be back on Barbecue Nation right after this. Barclays for your gold, silver, collectibles, rare coins, and high-quality jewelry. Barclays in Oregon, 503-982-2033. That's 503-982-2033. Barclays, buysellpawn.com. Welcome back to Barbecue Nation on the Envision Radio Networks. If you want to email us, it's easy. That's BBQ. At SalemPDX.com. That's BBQ at SalemPDX.com. You can find us on Facebook with BBQ Nation with JT. Now back to my interview with Mark Bittman and his book, How to Grill Everything.
He's a New York Times bestselling author, written 20 cookbooks. Is this number 20, Mark, or is this 21?
It depends how you count. So we just say about 20. There's okay. Some stuff in there that I've sort of forgotten about and deservedly. So it's in the low 20s at this point, but some don't exist anymore, and nor should they. So
yeah, I understand.
Yeah.
I wrote a Christmas cookbook 10 years ago, limited printing and all that, and I think I have the only existing copies, and that's where they're going to stay, is out in the garage. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, these three or four books, which were sort of derivative of How to Cook Everything, there's existing copies somewhere, but I don't have them and I don't want them. So that's fine.
Okay. One of the things that I noticed you talk about in that book, kind of in a serious about cooking vein here, is you talk about using the top shelf on a gas grill. I'm a big fan of that. I am a huge fan of using that rack up there for a number of reasons. Like when I cook chicken, I'll put it on the bottom rack. I kind of get it started, and then I might put it up there and finish it. A lot of things like that. And I think you've done really well pointing that out to people in this book.
Well, thank you. You know, 20 years ago, I used to have to fight with people about gas grills because, you know, real grilling people would say, well, it's just, that's disgusting. It's not grilling, et cetera, et cetera. I think now, you know, both the grills have changed. I mean, I have a gas grill now that gets up to 800 degrees. That's pretty hot.
That's pretty hot.
The grills have changed, and I think people's attitudes have changed. Everybody knows that. You know, the advantages of gas grills, the fact that you just turn them on and go, pretty much balance the disadvantages, you know, which is that you're not cooking over wood. And I talk about this in the book, and I talk about how you can use wood even on a gas grill and so on. But, you know, what you're pointing out is the control you get in a gas grill and the variety of temperatures and the difference between direct and indirect heat, and how much you can control that and how easily. Those are just tremendous, tremendous advantages. And a lot of people, myself included, now have both. You know, I have a grill that I can use, build wood fires in or use charcoal in, and I have a gas grill. And they sit next to each other, and sometimes I use one and sometimes the other and sometimes both.
Well, and some of those upper-end gas grills, Delta Line, Twin Eagles, so I don't need to name them all, you can use gas. Like you were saying, you can use wood, you can use charcoal in them. The charcoal grate raises and lowers, you can adjust that. I mean, some of the grills are so multi-purposed, if you will, now, that for somebody that
just wants a nice grill that can do multiple things on the on their patio or their front porch, that's kind of the way to go, I think.
Yeah, as long as you want to spend, what, upwards of $1,000.
So. Sure, sure. Well, actually, the Twin Eagles one I looked at was about $7,000, but I tried to get them to give me one, but they wouldn't do it. So, you know, what? Right. What? So I lost interest. But but
I like to have, I mean, I like to have the same kind of equipment that my the people who buy my books have. So, you know, I have, if we're naming names, I have a Broil King grill. It's probably a $300 grill. It is fabulous. Mm-hmm. It is really, really good. So, you know, I don't see them. I'd love to have adjustable racks, but there's a lot of stuff I'd like in life that I don't have. So what the hell?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, you can really get lost in the minutia of some of these grills. Some of them have landing lights on them now, and they're blue. I mean, they're gorgeous pieces of equipment. And, right. You know, and like I said, if somebody's going to give me one, I certainly won't turn it down. But I may not go out and spend $9,000 or $10,000 for a grill.
Right.
I'm still paying off my kids' college, for God's sakes. So,
right.
And that was like a triple mortgage or something. Anyway, we've got a couple minutes left before we go to break here. We were talking about off the air, something that I had really honestly not ever heard much about was smoking bologna. And I find that fascinating.
Again, I mean, as I said to you off the air, I think you need to talk to some of your barbecue buddies, because I sure didn't invent it. But, you know, I did grow up eating broiled or pan-fried bologna. And, you know, I had never tried grilling bologna, but I knew that it was a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So needless to say, it's like easy as could be. And it is kind of, I mean, there's not a big difference texturally or ingredient-wise between bologna and a hot dog. So what you have here is like a bigger surface area and more browning per bite. So it's kind of fun. It's a fun thing to do.
Well, I found it very interesting. And I don't know if you've ever done it, but I've grilled Spam. I don't know if you've ever done that, but
I have not, but similar.
Yeah. Yeah. And I have a lot of friends that live in Hawaii, and Spam is their national dish over there. And Dave's
right.
Waving his finger at me because he lived there for years. But that's kind of interesting to get that. And they make all kinds of crazy dishes with it.
All the time.
Did you
it's
ever?
It's a main staple. You could get Spam musubi at every 7-Eleven.
What is that, Spam shaped like a little moose or what?
Yeah, no, it's a little pan-fried Spam over
rice.
Seaweed wrap over rice. Yeah, a buck is what it used to cost, yeah.
Well, there you go, see? Maybe I'll come to New York and hang out with Mark and we'll start a new market for Spam back there.
Yeah, it's not quite up my alley. I mean, it's the kind of thing that's like really fun when you're doing it, but I'm not sure it translates that well to your house.
Probably not. We'll be back in a few minutes with more of Mark Bittman. Please stay with us.
Give me a ticket for an airplane. I ain't got time to take no fast train. Oh, the lonely days are gone. I'm coming home. Well, my baby, she wrote me a letter.
It's Barclays for your gold, silver, collectibles, rare coins, and high-quality jewelry. That's Barclays in Oregon, 503-982-2033, 503-982-2033, at BarclaysBuySellPawn.com. Glad to have you back on the Nation, Barbecue Nation, on the Envision Radio Network. Now let's get back to my interview with Mark Bittman, talking about his book, How to Grill Everything.
Mark, you write about the perfect steak, and like we said, I've only got a book with a black and white picture in it, but this thing looks gorgeous. Tell our listeners Mark Bittman's idea of a perfect steak, because I'm going to let you talk about this.
Okay. Well, first, let me just say that your listeners should know that in the real book, the pictures are in color and they're gorgeous. So,
yes.
You have a pre-production copy. You know, I'm a ribeye fan, but I also really do like tri-tip, and I would say those are kind of my two favorite steaks. I mean, there's a lot of cuts that are good.
Sure.
Skirt. I did skirt last week, and that was really fun, although it cooks so fast you have to really be careful. But there's not a lot to it. I mean, that's the thing about grilling, is that it makes things like direct cooked meats that are, you know, tender to begin with, like a ribeye, it makes them really, really easy to do. So you build a hot fire, you get a thick steak. I like the salt steak in advance. I'm not convinced I'm right about this, but it seems to me that it has a little bit more flavor, and it makes it easier to dry the surface. And the drier the surface is, the easier it's going to brown.
Mm-hmm.
So if the steak is thin enough, that is, I'd say an inch and a half or less, you can cook it over direct heat, and usually 4 minutes aside, maybe five, is good for medium thick steak. If it's a really huge thing, you have to cook it over indirect for at least part of the time, or it's going to burn. But you know, that's not the recipe. That's the general outline.
Sure,
but,
sure.
A steak is, you know, and there's a way in which a steak is easier to cook and cook well than almost anything. So that's really one of the beauties of grilling. Because doing a good steak indoors, that's trickier. But doing a good steak on a grill, especially if you have a grill that gets hot, that's not so hard.
Well, and I think that the one thing I like about grilling steaks outside, but my wife frowns when I pull one of the barbecues in the kitchen, but is that you can be cooking for a number of people. Say you've got four or five dinner guests or something, and if you're going to broil a steak in the oven, you know, they're all going to come out reasonably close to the same.
Right.
You know what I mean? But when you're grilling, you can say, okay, Dave likes his from rare to kind of between rare and medium rare there. Okay, so we know when to pull that. My wife likes hers a little more like a Reebok. So, you know, a little more well done. So it's easier. From a cook's perspective, I think it's easier to grill them outside and get everybody what they really want.
Right. I think that's true, too. I mean, that, one of the things I like about a tri-tip, and it's the same thing I like about leg of lamb or other cuts like that, is the unevenness of the cut. The fact that it's not even thickness means that you're going to have different levels of doneness in the same piece of meat, so that people who like, you know, better cooked meat can get it, while others who like rare can still get that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the other thing that's interesting about a steak, I think we have a little more time. Yeah.
Sure.
The other thing that's interesting about a steak is, you know, you can, and I just learned this in the course of doing this book. I mean, I learned it as a Boy Scout, but I really never did it as a grown-up, and that is you can cook steak directly on coals if you use real charcoal or wood, and you want, like, glowing hot embers, an even bed of glowing hot embers, and you can throw a steak right on there and cook it on both sides until it's done. And that's awesome. And people flip out because it's so unusual and so good. So that's a thought also.
Yeah.
Again, I think best with ribeye, but yeah.
Well, and I think that, yeah, you can do that. If you're adventuresome, you can do that. I mean, I've had those. They're great. But I think for the general practitioner, if you will, around a grill, they should probably stick with a gas grill, you know what I mean? Or charcoal, when they're doing these, because unfortunately the price of beef, I don't know how it is in New York now, but
no, good point. If you buy good beef, it's going to cost you. It's true. You don't want to screw up. But it's not as hard as it, you know, it's a little intimidating. You're like, I'm really going to do this, but it works. So.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It works. I mean, they did it, you know, 50,000 years ago with pterodactyls. So, I mean, you know, why not do it with an Angus, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that. One of the other things that you were, one of the other recipes that you have in here is liver. I am actually a liver fan. I grew up on a ranch. We had beef liver. My mom always pan fried it and with onions and stuff. But
I'll bet you $10 she overcooked it too.
Oh yeah. My mom was a pretty good cook, but some of those things they were pretty dry. And that's the way my dad liked his meat, was well done. You know.
Gross.
Yeah.
Sorry to hear that.
No, it's, you know, but we'd go to a restaurant and he'd say, well, you know, what do you like? And they'd say, well, I'm medium like that. My dad would say, well done. And so just to kind of be the antithesis of that, I would say either rare or medium rare. Once I figured out how the restaurant cooked them, whichever restaurant we were at, then I could say, oh, I'll have mine medium rare like that. So,
right. Most times you say rare and get medium rare, but yeah.
Yeah. So tell me about the liver. How did you come up with this?
Well, you know, the liver is really, really tricky. And I'm going to tell you something, because just not that I don't make mistakes. Obviously, I do. But I had some duck livers last week that were just gorgeous. And I grilled them for 3 minutes, and they were overcooked by 50%.
Really?
I mean, liver is really, really, it's probably the trickiest thing to grill, because it wants to be cooked for 2 minutes, and no one believes, you know, that anything is done in 2 minutes. And yet, you know, a half-inch thick piece of liver, or a chicken liver, or a duck liver, or a rabbit liver, they are literally done in 2 minutes. So that's you just have to sort of believe it, because the residual heat will cook them. Now, I like liver medium rare, and I like it to be a little creamy when it's done, because I feel like when you overcook it, it turns into like sawdust. It's really, really hard to take, and I'm sure that's why people always made it with bacon or with onions, because that would bring some moisture back to the dish. But
right.
If you're grilling liver, and again, my favorite has become rabbit liver, but rabbit, duck, lamb, those are the best livers. Beef and veal are really, really good. Pork is good also, but if you have a piece that's 3/4 inch, 1/2 inch thick, literally 2 minutes, maybe three. And I like to marinate with soy, not with soy, with olive oil, with a little sage or thyme and some garlic. But it's really, even that's not necessary. Liver's so underrated. It's such a good meat.
What do you, if I said, and we've got about a minute before we go to break, Mark, if I said, what's your favorite thing to grill when you're at home, it's just you and your family or whatever, and you're just going to cook, what's that? What do you do?
Yeah, I don't pick favorites that often, because I like, you know, what I have that looks good is what I cook. So, but, you know, I do, of course, I like steak. But I have to say that quite recently it's been organ meat, because it is not that popular. But if you're going to eat meat, you have to think about eating every part of the animal. It's kind of only fair. Otherwise, stuff
right.
is going to waste. And it's also true that every part of the animal, almost every part of the animal, is really, really good. So I've been grilling liver, as we just talked about, heart, kidney, tongue, and I love that stuff. I really do.
Well, we are going to take a break and circle back and finish the show in just a couple minutes. Stay tuned.
Seems I've got to have a chance to see you. Every night I have the spell just to impress by the way that could have been left here on my own.
out the door and took the key.
Barclays for your gold, silver, collectibles, rare coins, and high-quality jewelry. Barclays in Oregon, 503-982-2033. That's 503-982-2033. BarclaysBuySellPawn.com. Hey, welcome back, and I'm hoping you're having a great weekend, and you can get in some time on the grill. Now let's get back to my final segment with my interview with Mark Bittman.
And we were talking about this before, well, during the break. I grew up, we don't waste any of the animal. You know, when we raised feeder steers and stuff, we used them all. And maybe you don't eat the tripe or whatever, but you saved it and you gave it to people that do. Okay? And we had soup bones, you know, oxtail soup bones, whatever you want to call it. I mean, the hides got sent off to the factory to, they made gloves out of them or whatever. So I think that's very important. And whether it's the domesticated animal or a game animal, I don't think you should waste anything. What's your thought, Mark?
Well, that, you know, I actually gave a class the other day on so-called off cuts, and I did lamb tongue, I did kidney and liver, I did shank, I did lamb riblets, which are, or actually goat riblets, which are really great. I did beef heart. I mean, all of that stuff I really, really love. Many of them require special techniques or special treatment. You know, tongue, you generally want a brine tongue before you cook it.
Right.
But they can all be grilled. They're all awesome. They're usually much less expensive than, you know, your so-called prime cuts. And what you're doing is, you know, you're treating the animal with respect, because otherwise, you know, if you're just eating prime cuts and ignoring the rest of it, that you're raising animals just so you can eat a steak, that's kind of tough to take. So, I'm not saying it's a moral obligation to eat every part of the animal, but I think it's a good idea. And I think you're missing out if you don't. I mean, these are really, really delicious cuts of meat.
I think it's wise to find a purpose for every, like I was explaining how we did it on the farm when I grew up. And I know the beef producers, which I'm very familiar with around here, also do that. I mean, the hides are used for specific things. The tallow is used on and on and on. I don't have to delineate all of it. But they really don't waste anything anymore. And I think that's good. And, you know, people that hunt and fish, same thing. They don't waste stuff. And that's what we're supposed to do, I think. Just like you said, morally, we don't have to eat every part of the animal, but we should utilize it if we can. Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I think practically it makes sense, and it's a good point what you say. People who hunt and fish do eat every part of the animal, and that's because they know that not only is it the right thing to do, but all of this stuff is valuable and all of it is good. And you know, you work hard to get it, you might as well appreciate it.
Oh, I agree. I mean, I did it for years. Didn't really let anything go to waste. Boy, I'd be out there, because I cut up my own meat. And so I'd be trimming it, doing all this stuff, and I'd have one pile. And if you took what I actually threw away out of a deer carcass dressed out at 190, which is pretty good size, you know, what I threw away was maybe 5 pounds of stuff, of fat and gristle and what have you. It was very little.
Impressive.
Yeah. And I mean, because I'd even do the deer.
That's really great.
Deer ribs.
That's really great.
Yeah. So when the book is coming out in the 14th, is that right? Did I get that?
May 14th. Yep. That's right.
And it's going to be on.
I mean, you can pre-order on Amazon or whatever now if you know. And get it. Pretty much get it the 14th. But that's when it'll be available. Yeah.
So do you have plans for another book? You going to make it like 23, 24? 25, whatever the number is.
We never stop. Yeah, this is a juggernaut. It's unstoppable. I have a dinner book. I'm actually not quite sure what it's called. A dinner book coming out next year. And we are on the third version of the original How to Cook Everything. That is, How to Cook Everything came out in 98. We did How to Cook Everything, a second edition, sort of all revised. And we're revising again for a third edition going to come out in 2019. So moving right along for sure.
Well, we've got about 1 minute left, but I want to tell you a quick story. When my nephew got married, and this was back in 98, 99, sometime in there, my mother, his grandmother, gave him your book, How to Cook Everything. I believe it had a yellow cover, if I'm not mistaken, way back then. Maybe I'm thinking, but I know it was one of your books, because the kid couldn't cook and the girl he married couldn't cook. So grandma gave him a cookbook.
I'm really happy to hear that. Thanks for the story.
Mark Bittman, you've been a great pleasure, and thank you so much for being on Barbecue Nation. And like we said, his book will be out here in a couple of weeks and in the bookstores, but you can order it on Amazon. And good luck to you, my friend.
Thanks, Jeff. It's really been fun, and I'll talk to you soon.
We'll do it again.
You can find Mark's books on How to Grill Everything on Amazon and at most bookstores. And it was a real pleasure to talk with Mark Bittman today. I want to thank all of our affiliates down the line, and for Dave and Chris and myself. We'll be back next week with another edition of Barbecue Nation right here in the Turn It, Don't Burn It studio. Take care, everybody.
Barbecue Nation is produced by JTSD LLC Productions in association with Envision Networks and Salem Media Group. All rights reserved. Copyright 2019.